Hey, the It's Time for Coffee podcast is powered by the Converge Podcast Network. Hey friends, it's time for coffee, and I'm your friend and host, Jeanette. I'm so glad that you're here today. I hope you know by just pressing play on that podcast app, you have a friend with you. My hope is that as you listen, you will know that you are heard, valued, loved, and not alone no matter what stage of life you're in. I hope that you're subscribed so you never miss an episode, and it would mean the world to me if you left a rating or review. I'm so glad you're here, and I cannot wait to introduce you to this week's guest. Hey, it's time for relationships. We are in a new series, and like I mentioned last week, I was kind of teetering on this thought of this series being called It's Time for Family or It's Time for Relationships. And as I was listening and editing this week's episode, I realized Knox was talking about marriage and family, but also his work partnership. And I realized this conversation was much more about relationships. So I deemed it, it's time for relationships. Listen in because Knox McCoy is here to talk about fatherhood, business, partnership, pop culture, and his new book, All Things Reconsidered. I want to remind you that this conversation was recorded in early March, before the stay-at-home orders, before quarantine was even really a thing. This was even before Disney announced that Hamilton would be gracing its presence on Disney Plus. You need to know before we start that I'm a huge fan of Knox and his podcast, The Popcast with Knox and Jamie, and his co-host Jamie B. Golden. I'm just a huge fan. You can hear the giddiness in my voice in this episode. I hope that you'll enjoy today's conversation and be encouraged to see God everywhere. So friends, grab your cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive in. This is so fun. Knox, I'm so excited for you to be here. This is, like, I just got done, like, fangirling and telling you what a fan I am of you and the podcast. If anybody has not listened to the podcast, just, like, pause this and come back to me, like, in a couple weeks and listen because you're going to want to catch up.
But that's probably bad for your health. It's bad for your mental health. Do not do that.
I'm such a fan, and I'm so thankful that you're here, and you're here because you're promoting your second book. It's going to come out in June, and it's just going to be so great. So, Knox, hey, how are you?
I'm good. You know, I think you said this is going to run, like, later, so you'll be listening to Past Us.
Yes.
And we are in tip of the spear of the coronavirus, so who knows how it's going to play out. It's kind of wild right now, you know, like, there's no toilet paper in the world. You know, here I'm in my office for recording. They're doing construction outside, and there's a new impromptu water balloon fight. So if you hear a little bit of that, that's just the nice little texture to this conversation.
Is that Jamie and Aaron doing a water balloon fight, or is that just like people outside?
Man, if it was, I don't think I'd be here. I'd be videoing that for content. But maybe one day, we can dream that maybe one day that'll happen.
That's good. What is something that you would tell future you in this moment?
Oh man, I don't know, but like, you didn't need all of the meat you bought in the chest freezer that you have in your garage. You didn't cook at all, but you bought, so like, maybe chill on buying like all the stuff that you think. Like, I'm in the mindset of like, society's gonna break down. Oh. And maybe it does. I'm hoping it doesn't, but I think I'm over prepared for that to happen. Like, I'm overly invested in that. Does that make sense?
Oh, for sure. I know that you're a huge Disney fan, like, mm-hmm. going to Disney World and all of that.
Yeah.
We go about as much as you guys do. And okay. The fact that the parks closed down stressed me out.
I was like,
so it's apocalyptic. We're here.
It's straight up apocalyptic. And I will tell you, on the theme of like, you know, so the book, All Things Reconsidered is the book. It's this whole thing of like reconsideration. I had a recent reconsideration because we went in February to Disney, and we got done with that trip, and we went with like our family, like my parents and my sister and her kids. And I told Ashley on the way back, I was like, I think that one broke me. I think I'm broken from Disney.
Oh, no.
Because it's all like, the myth about Disney is like, you can find the not crowded season.
That's
a fallacy. It's always super duper crowded. And I think the Star Wars stuff just like amplified it, you know? And it's just, there's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to breathe. You're always touching people and you're being sweated on. And I was like, this one broke me. This one kind of broke me.
It's going to be a while for you guys
to
go back.
It's going to be a while. Yeah.
If they open back up, like, future Janet, please. Please see a Disney World back open. Okay, Knox, what's in your cup this morning?
In my cup, I drink the same coffee every single day. I'm very boring in that way. It's Pike Place, one sweet and low.
Very nice. That's
every good. Day. I don't do the ice. I don't do any cream. I just get that straight up caffeine every single day.
Okay. And as a fan of the show, I know that you typically have multiple drinks around you. Is it just the cup of coffee this morning?
Oh, very good. So I'm gonna visually show you.
Please.
And you can relate. So this is my coffee. This is a Sirius Black mug that I love. I have a coconut LaCroix as well. And then just in case, I don't know, I start sweating profusely, I've got a Dasani just to hydrate. So
perfect.
I'm a nervous drinker. And when I talk, I feel like it really gives me something to do with my hands.
Yeah.
You know, instead of focusing on all the words I'm saying.
I agree. So, I get it.
There's a psychological issue there. It's fine.
So another thing that we have in common, and then I'll promise, like, we'll stop, like, and then. You and Ashley got married super young, just like Jesse and I. And I love that you kind of talk about this, because in a world where marriages kind of get pushed back later and later in life, and maybe sometimes don't always last, there's some people who get married young and make it work.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, because you told me before we started that you were 18 and a half. And that's amazing, because that's very young. B, I love the use of the half. I think more adults should be using halves, because I'm, you know, 37 and a half right now. And right. That's fun to say. So let's get that going.
Let's start it for sure. At 18 and a half, that matters.
In fields of legality, that super matters, especially for what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But Ashley and I got married, I think I was 21 and she was 20, because she was not legally old enough to drink, you know. But I know that sounds a little older than you were probably thinking, but we were intellectually and emotionally, we were probably like 13 or 14, you know. We were very stupid and like very immature. So I think that it was like a cumulative age of like 17 in my head. That's how I call it.
It wasn't good. I mean, it was good because we're married and we still love each other very, very much. But if I have a 13-year-old who'll be 14 in August, and that's only 4 years away from getting married. I'm like, no.
Do they seem ready to get married?
But the Bachelor will take them. He'll be able to go on the Bachelor, so it's fine. Oh,
what a nightmare. It used to be, growing up, it was like, I think older parents were like, I don't want my kid to end up on the real world.
Yeah.
But now it's very much the Bachelor or the Bachelorette.
Yeah.
The dream, like, to be a successful parent, you just don't want your kid on the Bachelor or the Bachelorette, you know. But, you know, in all things we consider, I write about, there's a chapter about marriage, and it's about, and I think what you were saying kind of resonates with this. I don't think I would want my kids to get married that young, you know, but like, I don't regret getting married that young, because Ashley and I very much grew up together, you know, and when you're stupid and ignorant together, that really bonds you in a way. So like, you become who you want to be and who you're meant to be all at the same time together. And I really, like, I like that aspect of it.
Yeah, that's one thing we've always said. It's been like a mantra in our marriage, which is like, we will grow up together so we don't grow apart. Like, if we are really focused on like being together and like making our marriage work, and we were so young, but it was like, if we just grow up together, we won't grow apart.
Exactly. Like when you're learning like what a mortgage is, how co-pays work together. You know, that's a bonding experience, and you basically can't get divorced because like, you've been through too much together.
One of my very favorite stories, I don't think I've ever shared it, was we went grocery shopping together for like, you know, for the first time when you're not going in to buy like movie candy. We went grocery shopping, and it was like, buy four 12 packs of soda and you get it discounted. Well, we didn't realize you didn't have to buy like 12 cases of soda. So we had so much soda in our fridge, like grape soda. Like,
sure.
It was like, that's one of our favorites. Like,
hey, I gotta be honest with you. That's still tough for me right now, you know, and I'm a veteran of marriage. And that's hard. Numbers are hard. But like, if the coronavirus would have hit, then you would have been prepared with soda. So
I would have had tons of orange soda, tons of grape soda, cola and everything.
Good to go.
Awesome. Knox, how long have you been in the podcasting world? Because your show, The Popcast, is 5 years old, 6 years old?
That's right. It's 5 years old. It'll be 6 years old, I think, in September, I believe. It's always August or September. I never remember. But I've been podcasting since, you know, like, I started, I stumbled onto the internet in 2008 when my son was born. And I started a blog back when blogs were a thing. I started a blog to write about like what it was like to become a parent for the first time, because I, you know, my whole life I knew I wanted to write, and it was like, I'm kind of a frustrated writer, so I don't know how else to do this besides start a blog. So I did that for a few years, wrote about parenthood, wrote about being a dad, wrote about The Bachelor, stuff like that, like a sarcastic, you know, snarky recap of The Bachelor. And then we went to, a bunch of us who were writing at the time, went to a blog conference run by Brian Elaine, a friend of mine. I think it was called Blog Rocket, and it was like how to, you know, boost your online profile, whatever. So a bunch of introverts in a room in Nashville, and that's where I met Jamie and Aaron. And I knew, like, I was like, I really like these people. They seem very funny. I want to work with them. I don't really know how. But I met a group of guys as well, and we started our first podcast together called The Courtesy Laugh. And I think it's still on iTunes. It's one of those, like, we didn't know how to podcast. It's very not good, you know, but we were just kind of learning the beats. And from there, I launched a network with my good friend, Jason Waterfalls. And we tried to, back then it was like, if you could hit a certain amount of downloads, you can make money. And our thing was like, let's hit 10,000 downloads and we'll do that. But the marker kept changing. And it was like, you got to do 20,000 now, 30,000. And eventually his wife got pregnant. So he was like, I can't do this anymore. And when that happened, we disbanded the network. And Jamie had been doing some shows on the network with Aaron. And Aaron, she was really busy. And they just moved. She was like, I don't really want to podcast anymore. So my whole goal was like, eventually to write a book. And I thought, if I can build a platform, I'll write a book and this will be great. And Jamie had some creative energy. So I obviously had a creative purpose. So like, let's just podcast for a little bit and like, see if we can do something. And that was 5 years ago. We started recapping The Bachelor. And then we kind of turned it into a weekly show. And, you know, and then 5 years later, here we are still doing it.
5 years later, here you are, the king and queen of content.
we're putting stuff out. I don't know if it's great, but we're definitely consistently putting stuff out, right?
You're consistently putting stuff out, but you're consistently growing.
Yeah, that's true. That's been, you know, that's been a really encouraging part of podcasting is we've consistently grown the show. And I think a lot of that is, you know, for what we do. And I think a lot of people, you listen and you'll either like it or you automatically hate it. And that's great. Like, it might not be for people. But I think Jamie and I are uniquely suited to, I've got my area of the business where it's more production and I set the shows up and I edit it. And we call me like, I'm the content officer, right? And Jamie's the marketing officer. We don't overlap at all. So we're very much in charge of our own spheres. And I think, I think we're good at what we do. And Jamie's remarkable what she does. She's so good at getting the word out. And I think a lot of the growth can be attributed to her savviness and kind of brilliance at not marketing in a gross way, but marketing in a, hey, here's what we do. If you like it, cool. If not, no big deal. And that's been a big reason why the show's grown as much as it has.
Yeah. Aaron was on the show actually earlier this year, but she said, and I just thought it was such a cool compliment. She said, nobody works harder than you two, than you and Jamie. And I just thought that was such a cool thing. She goes, and I'm not saying that because I work for them. I'm saying that because I, day in and day out, see them working so hard. And I'm like, that's so nice. That's so kind.
And especially coming from Erin, who is just a monster of working herself to death because she's doing so many different things. And honestly, you know, I think our business hit the next level when we were able to start working with Erin because she brings so much to the table in terms of order and control and seeing a bigger picture than Jamie and I have the room to see. But even more, I think the creative aspect she brings to the table, I think we've only scratched like the surface of like 10% because she hasn't had the opportunity because she is so smart and so funny in her own right. And we're trying to make space for her to be able to do more stuff because for her to not be out there more is just a crime, I think.
Agreed. So one of the things I want to talk to you about today is we're in the series It's Time for Family, and we don't get to interview a bunch of men because I'm a girl. But one thing I want to talk to you about today is being a freelance entrepreneur dad. Like, how have you balanced this life? And you've done it so well, and you even moved your family closer to Aaron and Jamie, I assume, so that you guys could continue working together in a closer proximity. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, you know, so I, in college, I was an English major and I got to a junior and I was like, oh, I don't want to teach. Why did I do that? That was dumb. I shouldn't have done that. But I was too far in to like start over. So I thought I will figure this out. And luckily, I grew up, my dad was an entrepreneur. So I kind of watched him a little bit and we always had this dream to open a sporting goods store together. Which we did in about 2008. And then the financial crisis hit. And I don't know if you know this, but people don't like to shop for sporting goods during financial crises. So that didn't go well. I ended up working, I managed a t-shirt printing company. So I oversaw that. And that's when I really started writing and creating stuff on the internet, and I knew I wanted to get there. From there, I was hired to be the lead writer for an online Christian mini movie company. So I would write the scripts, and they would do the videos, movies like that. And at the same time, I was doing the podcast with Jamie. And there was like an inflection point of me working for me, making good money for this online company, and it being like, I'm a little creatively frustrated because this is Christian content. And I don't know that it's not what I want to do, but it's not, I feel like I speak a little bit of a different language, and that's okay. But it was like, I have to choose between kind of jumping off the cliff here with the podcast, not making as much money, hoping it works, but I saw more upside there. But I made that leap, and I subsidized kind of what I would have lost with a lot of freelance jobs, you know, copywriting, ghostwriting, writing scripts and stuff for like Lifeway and stuff like that. And eventually we got to where I was making about the same. But, you know, to your original question, it was a little complicated because when Ashley and I were married, she was first grade teacher, and we made the decision early that while we had kids and while they were young, we want her to stay home just to be very hands-on. And that was just, you know, a decision we made for our family. And so it was in the middle of this time where that was happening. And it was like, I think a lot of times people, podcasting is a side hustle for people. And it was, I didn't have that option, you know? So it's like, I was always very aggressive. And I think Jamie would even comment, like, I was probably a little too aggressive. Like, what's the path to monetization here? What's the long-term vision here? Because like,
how do we get there?
Yeah. And I've got mouths to feed, and I've got like braces to put on. And part of that, sometimes you can kind of strangle that in the crib if you're too aggressive about that. But there was, I think in a lot of ways, there was an enthusiasm and a calculation of this has to work for me because I don't have any other option right now. So I think it ended up being a really nice dynamic that we balanced of ambition, but also with some restraint on Jamie and both Aaron's part of like, let's make aggressive decisions, but let's make them intelligently. Did that even remotely answer your question?
Yeah, I think for sure. Okay. Cause I'm going to go back and ask a couple more. Like, how did you tell Ashley, like, hey, remember, you know that podcast I'm doing? We're doing good. I'm going to stop this other job and go all in. Was she like, sure, that's awesome. Or was it like, but we have to buy food?
Yeah, well, so it was, she had seen, there was a degree of unhappiness with the former job.
Right.
Yeah. And I think it's a lot. That's not really about the job and the people there. The people I was working for and the job was great and they were amazing. It was more like, this is not what I want to do, you know? So she was witness to that every single night. So when that conversation eventually happened, she wasn't like, whoa, where's this coming from?
Right.
But, you know, honestly, quite frankly, there was some fear. There was like, okay, great. And I know you're going to work really hard, but what if it like doesn't work? And because a lot of it too was monetizing podcasts was not like, oh yeah, yeah, we'll monetize a podcast. That's great. Let's do that. You know, that was, people have certainly done it, but it was kind of still an unknown quantity.
Yeah.
But you know, Ashley was like, that's great. I'm going to do some stuff on the side too.
Yeah.
So in case yours doesn't work, I'm going to have this and we can ramp that up. And that was smart. But it kind of lit a fire under me of like, I can't, there's a fear. And I think unique to my personality, not unique to my personality type. I don't think anyone's like, failure is great.
I love it.
I think
it's more, you know, I'm going to strive for failing actually.
Right. It's pretty chill actually. We should do it more. But like really there's an incompetence to failure attached to my personality type of like, I can't let this person down. She depends on me. You know, I told her I felt like this is a good idea. I need to make good on that. So it was a good season of we're bonded together by, I don't know what the future holds, but like we got to do it together. And, you know, hopefully this will work out.
Well, and you had Jamie on that side too of like, hey, I told you that we can make this work. Now I kind of like we have to do this. And
yeah.
Monetizing podcasts isn't easy. It's very, very fickle, I feel. And people think that, like, I'm just going to start a podcast and monetize it. It's totally fine. It's like,
yeah.
No, like, you can't. I mean, you can, but you should be wise about those decisions first.
I think it's getting a little easier.
Yeah.
In terms of the, what's the word? Like, the paths to monetization have been more manicured now. However, the marketplace is more crowded. So therefore people vying for that monetization. So the formatting is a little, because back in the day, like cold calling people and be like, I've got a podcast. We reach X amount of people. This would be a great fit for you. The first question was, what is a podcast?
Right.
So like that's a tough hurdle to clear, but now that's a little more formalized, I guess, those structures.
Yeah. That's awesome. And then you said something else about like all the freelancing. So you're working the podcast, the podcast, like it's a real job, but you're also freelancing on top of that. So you, was there a season where you were just like, my whole life is producing content? Did you ever like hit a wall? Were you like so tired?
Yes, but you know, I think I don't know if you're, you know, I don't know if your listeners necessarily speak Enneagram. Yeah, well, I feel like most people speak Enneagram at this point. They've just been hit over the head with it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'm an Enneagram 5. So the whole thing with us is like, we have a limited amount of energy, you know, yes. And I've always like, flinched at that because I don't love that. And I think I was raised by a, Enneagram 3. My dad, it's a very, you know, that's like the formative relationship in my life. We're really good friends. He was my role model, and I always saw him like going crazy, going, but like working super hard, not to where like we never saw him. He'd always manage that really, you know, threes, they do everything.
They're the best at everything. Awesome.
Right. So there was a part of me that internalized that of like, well, that's how, as a man, that's my dad. I need to be like that. So there's an aspect of, I don't want to fail. There's an aspect of, this is like, you're just supposed to work really hard and kind of be tired. And that's just like kind of how it has to be. But it was a lot of desperation of like, I don't care if I'm tired. Like I have to make this work. So I'm going to take all the jobs. I'm going to do all the things. I'm going to write about pregnant Kim Kardashian because that pays really well. And then I'm going to go over here and edit these podcasts because that doesn't pay as well, but those are good inroads. So I got to like manicure all the things.
Yeah. That's so cool. And it's just, I think as a dad and as an entrepreneur and as a husband, all of those things, it just kind of goes into like the, where you guys, I'm not a man, so I don't know, but you guys are taught to provide like that is your role and gender norms, blah, blah, blah. I just think
they're very real thing. Yeah. And especially, and not to be like, they're real. So like, that's, let's be cool with it. It's not like that. But the reality is we grew up in a place, you know, before we moved, it was like, everyone was lawyer, doctor, teacher, fireman, policeman. And it was like, there was a self-conscious aspect of like, what, I'm a podcaster, what, you know, like in small groups, I'd be like, I don't want to go on introduction day. I just want to like be here and not have to explain my deal. Cause that's weird. So it's like the race to make it good and make it substantial. That is such like a psychological element of insecurity, you know?
Yeah. I totally understand that. Okay. So let's talk about your books. Your first book, The Wondering Years, which was just so great. And I actually listened to it. So I have a question for you. If you listen to books, does it count as you read them?
Oh, 100%. Okay. I asked Anne Bogle this question, who I feel like is the book whisperer.
Yes.
I was like, does it count? And like, you know, I went to like Tibet and like found her where she was meditating on puzzle books. And I was like, answer this question. And she was like, 100% it counts. So if Anne says it counts, it counts.
It does.
So,
yes. And I am that person who will say like, I read this book while I listened to it. So I have to stop. I have to stop doing that.
You can still just say read. I think most people are like, I don't care. Did you consume the book? I don't care how you consumed it. Did you consume it? You say whatever you want then. It's okay.
So I read your book, The Wondering Years. It was so good. And I think you tell, okay, first, like give like the background of The Wondering Years.
So I'd been trying to write The Wondering Years since like 2006. And the thing with publishers is like, you have to have people to sell the book to for us to even be interested in you. So I spent, you know, I guess almost 10 years trying to build a platform to be able to do the book. And I finally got the chance, W Publishing, I guess a subsidiary kind of Thomas Nelson, gave me a book contract, allowed me to write it. It originally was titled like Pop Culture with My Sunday School Teacher, because I was always fascinated with how Christianity intersects with pop culture, because you're told like just instinctively it's a bad thing, but at all these different turns, they're always kind of circling each other.
Right. Well, how many times did you break CDs in youth group or because of youth group? Because you can't listen to secular music.
Oh, exactly. I actually never did because I was like, I'm going to listen to secular music. I'm sorry, guys. I'll also listen to DC Talk. I'm not going to burn my CDs. Those cost money, you know? But I've been to those bonfires 100%. Yes. I don't know. After like Nazi stuff, it just always felt like should we be burning media in a big fire, guys? This is a weird look. So the whole premise of the Wondering Years is like, I was bad at church. I was bad at being a, you know, good Christian, because I always needed the places I found God, and the places where God resonated with me the most would happen in books, movies, TV shows, music. And so the premise of the Wondering Years is like, what if you looked for God in pop culture? Could you do that? And it's a little bit of my story, but it's a little bit of kind of the early stages of deconstruction of what I grew up with. Like, you know, I spent the first 18 years trying to building this foundation of God. And then the last 18 years were like, okay, let's actually take that apart, because that doesn't really work anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was a great book. And I loved how you intertwined your stories with, like, I mean, because I listened to your guys' show, I can see more clearly that it's totally fine to see God in everything. And I have a devotional coming out someday, who knows when. but I wrote about Moana, like the gospel as seen by Moana.
Man, like because I write a little bit in the Wondering Years about Moana, because there, and it was a specific moment that I know is probably like specific to me, and there was stuff I was dealing with. So I'm probably projecting a lot of stuff onto Moana, but the whole idea, I feel like there's a rich metaphor of like, you've got this girl on an island, no one wants her to leave, no one wants her to challenge anything. And then that scene where she's a little girl and she goes in the water, and like the water, like, you know, puts a flower in her hair and like holds her, like that felt like God to me, you yeah. know? And I would watch that with my girls. I'm like, why am I crying? What's going on here?
What's happening?
It's so vivid, yeah. you know, there. And I think, and this isn't like to shade to pastors or church or anything, but I have rarely ever had that kind of feeling in a church service. And that's a lot about me, but a lot of it is I need to be off my guard. Because in church, I'm always like, oh, really? Oh, is that right? Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Show me that in the Bible, bro.
Yeah. But like when you're watching Moana, you are just, your guard's down and you're just watching a story. So, and I think a lot of it too comes, and I feel like I'm flying all over the place, so please forgive me. But I think a lot of it too is the specific brand of Christianity I grew up with was, God is here in this church. He's at this like White Wing Christian bookstore, Lifeway bookstore. And that's it. He is not in anything. Kirk Cameron movies. The end, you know? And that's ridiculous, because God is God is God. And like, God can be wherever he wants. He can be at McDonald's, guys, if he wants to.
Whoa. So, you
know, he could be in that 20 piece chicken nugget. I hate to tell you, but it's true. But like, when God can be in Moana, God can be anywhere. It's more about you being ready to like receive and accept God, and whatever message is trying to be communicated. That's like the real challenge. That was for me anyways.
For sure. I totally agree. The other place that I have felt like the Holy Spirit, like just consumed me and changed my life was at Disney World, watching okay. Happily Ever After, the fireworks spectacular.
Sure. Of course.
Mufasa in the air. And he says like, right. Remember who you are. And I'm like, okay.
I will try.
And then it goes into Hercules song. It's just like every time we watch it, Jesse's like, oh my gosh, why are you crying?
She goes again.
The kids call it my Disney cry. They're like, oh, mom's got her Disney cry going.
Well, because also the subtext there is you're exhausted. Yes. You're sweaty. You've been eating crappy food. You have no vitamins or nutrients in your body. Yes. So, but you would argue, what is it like, you go on like, that's like your version of a walkabout in Australia. Yeah. Oh, because you're physically and emotionally depleted. Yeah. So you're ready to receive some like grand message. So yeah. Good for you. You should keep doing that.
Thanks for sure.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now a message from a network supporter.
Remember in sex ed when we learned to prevent pregnancy at all costs? And we have all the tools to prevent pregnancy, but when it comes to planning ahead for it, it can be a mystery. Well, now it's time for fertility education. That's why Modern Fertility was created. It's the easy and affordable way to test your fertility hormones at home with a simple prick of a finger. Then you mail it in with a prepaid label and get your personalized results within 10 days. Traditional testing with your doctor can cost over thousands of dollars, but Modern Fertility only costs $159 to get the same information. And if you go to modernfertility.com/coffee, you can get $20 off your test. That means your test will only cost $139 instead of the hundreds or thousands it could cost at a doctor's office. It's time for fertility education. modernfertility.com/coffee for $20 off your test now.
So tell us about All Things Reconsidered. So how does this book follow the Wondering Years?
Okay, so All Things Reconsidered is, obviously it's about reconsideration and deconstruction. I think I never intended this, but as I was writing it, I thought, oh, this kind of makes sense. The Wondering Years ends with a chapter where I talk about my dad who got cancer, and I try not to be the cliche, my dad got cancer and I shook my fist at God, but it was more like, okay, here's the first faith challenge I've ever had. What does this mean? You know, and I really take that apart and talk about some other things that I'm trying to deconstruct. That All Things Reconsidered is kind of the sequel to that chapter, which is like, that's my favorite chapter in the Wondering Years. So All Things Reconsidered is about, there's so much going on in the world. There's so much happening. I barely have enough time to process any of it, much less reconsider it. And I talk about the value of reconsideration, not just with faith, because the book is divided in three sections. It's like, reconsider yourself, your life, and your faith. But it's all these different things of like, what does it mean? What does home mean? And that was written while Ashley and I were trying to decide, should we leave Tennessee, where we lived literally our whole lives, and go to Birmingham, or should we stay put? There's a chapter about reconsidering Big Bird and Uncle Joey, because if you look a little closer, I think they're more villainous than we all, assume. But then, probably the heart of the book is the faith side. It's the last third of the book, and it's about reconsidering heaven, hell, a prayer, where you go to church. And I think it was important for me for that process, for the book itself and the process of writing it, to not be like, hey, you guys, I did this and here's what's up. Here's the truth.
This is the right way to do it.
Exactly. Because that's not me as a writer or a person. It was just like, here's what I'm going to do. I've never really understood what I believed about hell or heaven. So I'm going to really like deconstruct, and you're going to watch my process. I'm going to write about it. And then sometimes I'm going to land on like, this is exactly what I think now. Sometimes I'm going to be like, I completely disagree with what I thought. Sometimes I'm going to say, I actually still exactly believe what I thought. And sometimes it's, I don't know. I still don't know, but like I'm thinking about it. So it's very much a watch me as I do this thing. And hopefully whatever you're dealing with and whatever you're trying to reconsider, my little process can help you with what you're trying to do. So I don't know if it's going to work, but the ambition is like, I think we should always be in a season of like reconsidering or just really verifying why we believe what we believe. So that's maybe that's a better way to say, like, that's what the hard work is, helping everyone realize why we need to know what we think and why.
I love that. That's so good. And one thing I've learned as I've just opened myself up to writing more and more is that God wrecks me as I write. I call it keyboard counseling.
Ooh, that's good.
And I can imagine as you're going through, like breaking down, like that's like legit forms of counseling. How are you? Did you fare okay writing this book? Like, that's a lot of hard work.
I think a lot of it was, the groundwork was laid when we decided to start the Bible Binge, our other show on the Podcast Media Group. And, it's a book where we say we recap the Bible, like it's a book, a movie, TV show, something like that. And getting into that show, we asked everyone in our lives, like, what do you think about this idea? Because we wanted a place to talk about the Bible where we didn't have to have a seminary degree, because neither of us do. But it's like, we like the Bible and we want to talk about it. And we want to like commune with other people who don't have seminary degrees and they want to talk about the Bible. And everyone in our lives were like, that's the worst idea. You bozos have no business talking about the Bible. Please do not do that. We did it anyway. But a lot of it was, okay, so we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about Noah. We're going to talk about Adam and Eve. And like, when you talk about it on a podcast, you need to know what you believe and you need to know why. And I found like most of these stories I just kind of interacted with in Sunday school and I was like, I don't really know what I think. Or there were portions that I missed. So I think that muscle started to develop while we were doing the Bible Binge. And then, after the Wondering Years, there was just, I think I was in the place of like, I'm dissatisfied with myself and my relationship to my faith. It just feels like a nothing burger, And it's like, I need to do some work here. And it was really hard, but like, I've never felt more, I don't know. It's weird because it's a little paradoxical. I've never felt less connected to like the traditional mechanism of the church, but I've never felt more like invested in my own heart, in my own faith of what I believe. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that. That's so good because it really, it kind of brought you full circle where you're like, I don't know, maybe I should dig into this. And you're like, no, I'm feel like I can, I think you said like, I feel like I'm standing on solid, more solid ground now.
Yeah. Cause I think a lot of times, especially in my early adulthood, I got into this mindset of like, yo, the Old Testament sucks. It's the worst. And like, there's definitely some sucky parts about the Old Testament, like made no mistake. But in the process of doing the Bible binge and especially writing All Things Reconsidered, I was like, there's actually something really beautiful about the Old Testament when like, you know, there's not genocide and stuff like that. That again sucks. But there's some really simplistically beautiful moments. Like I go back to like Moses and the burning bush and that vision of God. And like my vision of God was always old guy, horn rim glasses, white cloak. He vaguely looked like George Burns. And like, like, what does that even mean? You know, but like this idea of God is like this robust flame of love and power and like communication to like, I was like, whoa, I've never thought about God in that way. You know? So like, I think there's some elements in the Old Testament that I came around to of like, whoa, this is actually like really deep and meaningful to me.
Mm-hmm. I also think too, the Old Testament, they didn't have hope of what was to come. They were just, I feel like this is a metaphor for the coronavirus right now. Like we have no idea what's to come. We are the Old Testament. Hopefully we don't decide. Just like
we're in Old Testament times right now, and especially on the internet. I think Twitter is the Old Testament, honestly. So, but I think you're right. It's like there's something really, you know, I don't want to get too in the weeds, but like when you go back and you read about some of these Old Testament characters who were just like, I'm ready to die, and their idea of the afterlife wasn't like awesome heaven or like terrible hell. It was just like this nothing, this gray nothing. And like they had no hope.
Yeah.
But they were still like faithful.
Yeah.
Like there's a devotion in there probably. You know. Like,
you can write it. I'll let you. I don't want God to direct me about that. The last few questions I ask everyone, and I know that you have quite the list for us, and I'm always such a fan of your guys' green lights that you do on your podcast. One that you shared last year was Dearly Beloved. Oh, so.
Oh, wow, man, that wrecked me. That book wrecked me. And it was in the middle of All Things Reconsidered. There was just a lot of tears. And I'm not a crier, you know, but it was like uncomfortable for me. Yeah.
I loved it because being a pastor's kid, I could see a little bit like behind the scenes or behind, like just my own feelings were placed in it for sure. And I was like, man, this is good. And oh my gosh, I have to tell you this because Jesse gets so annoyed with me. I'm like, I don't think we should watch that movie. I don't think it's going to do very well. And he's like, just because you heard it on the podcast doesn't mean we're not going to watch it. I'm like, I don't think it's going to be good.
So. They're idiots. They're literally idiots. What are you doing? You can't. Yeah, I get that. Ashley does the same thing. I'm like, I don't know. We did a box office recap and like the RT score is really bad. She's like, we're going to watch the movie. Don't bring your baggage to this situation.
Please don't work while we're watching this. okay. Who or what is your guilty pleasure social media follow?
So I found this a few months ago, and I don't know, it's not like a very uplifting, you know, account, but I love celebrity drama. I love athlete drama. I love like Twitter beefs between famous people. So this account, it's like comments by celebs.
Oh, it's so good.
And I think there's like a comments by athletes too, but like it highlights the overlap of celebrities commenting on celebrity stuff. So I like how it reveals a little ecosystem of like which famous people like which famous people and which ones don't, but also you can get like some shade between athletes of like their posts, and I'll show the comments on the bottom of the post. It's just such a rich text. I really like it.
Whoever thought of that was just like genius.
It's brilliant, and it's such an animal of the social media world right now, because if I was trying 15 years ago, if I was trying to describe to you what this would be, you'd be like, what are you talking about? Instagram, and there's an account within an account.
Yeah.
That's how, what are you saying? But you know, what a world we live in now.
I also want to know like how long they work every day.
Cause you have to be looking at so many garbage posts of like, you know, diarrhea tea that people, and like looking for shady comments in that. Like they're really doing some good work.
You know, it's probably the Lord's work too. Like they're just really like, they're doing it for us.
Lord's work. I agree with you. Yeah.
What's something you've read, watched, or heard lately that you're obsessed with?
Okay. I got a bunch of things. So if you would be so graceful with me, I appreciate that. And we talked about some of these on the podcast, but to reiterate, Ashley and I just finished High Fidelity. It's on Hulu.
Okay.
It stars Zoe Kravitz. Did you ever see the original movie or read the book?
I definitely didn't read the book. Jesse said he likes the movie, but I don't think I've seen it.
The movie holds up. It's really, because it's older. It's like maybe late 90s, but it's got Jack Black, John Cusack, and a couple, I think Tim Robbins is in it or shows up. It's a really good movie. It's like my favorite Jack Black, but this is a retelling of it over like a season of TV, and they switch the roles. So instead of John Cusack, it's Zoe Kravitz. It's hilarious. It's a little bit profane. There's some language stuff, but it's really, really well done. And it's like 27 minutes. So I'm really into the not long, super sad dramas. I'm into like lighter, quicker stuff right now. So that's one. The Watchmen on HBO, that's really good. You don't have to have read the comics or seen the movie to like get it. Damon Lindelof, who did Lost and The Leftovers, and he's just great at TV. Succession on HBO, that's probably one of my favorite TV shows of the year. It's about profanely wealthy people and their dysfunction. And you know, my mom, I've talked about this, my mom told me a long time ago, she's like, it's more interesting to watch rich people be dysfunctional than poor people, because rich people have more resources to be dysfunctional with. And that's 100% what this show is. I've got Better Call Saul. I've got The Outsider. Those are really good TV shows. Better Call Saul is just now started, and The Outsider just finished. It's creepy. Better Call Saul is. Did you watch Breaking Bad?
I did. I know you love it, and I just like you hate. I hate every single character in it except for Jesse.
I'm sorry. What are you saying right now? Are you telling me you hate Breaking Bad?
It was so bad. You don't like anybody.
It's over. This interview is finished now.
I liked you. Now I don't. we watched it, and I was like, I hate everybody, and I love everyone.
That's like that song. Like, there's not a ton of likable people in this TV show, but I will say, like, it at least at the end, it pays off you not liking people. Right. You know, like it honors that. And beyond that, like, technically, it's just like maybe the most well-made prestige TV show I've ever seen.
It really holds up. We watched the last like four episodes when the spinoff one with
Better Call Saul.
No, El Camino, when El Camino came out.
Oh, El Camino. Yes, with Jesse.
Yeah. So we watched like the last like three or four episodes so that we remembered what was happening. And that was great. Like, sure. He's my favorite character. He's everybody's favorite character.
Right.
But we have never gotten into Everybody Call Saul.
It's one of those, you got to be real in on Breaking Bad to like it. And if you're not, it'll be like, well, I don't exactly know where this is coming from, but it shouldn't be a good premise of a TV show, but it's a really, really great premise. So I really like
it. What was your thoughts on Sons of Anarchy?
Okay. That's actually, man, I forgot this. That's actually the first paid podcasting gig I ever had.
Really?
I was paid by company to recap it. So like, I think it came on Wednesday nights. I would stay up super late on Wednesday after the airing because it came on like 10.
Yeah.
And then I'd call in and like recap it with this other guy named Brian, and I'd send it in and edit it. I loved that show, like the first maybe three seasons. And then it got progressively wilder and wilder. Yeah. And like
up the ante every time.
Yeah, so I finished it out, but it was like, I'm only finishing this because I started, not because I want to. You know what I mean?
I think that was one of our very favorites. And I liked the way they ended it.
Yeah.
But when that new one came out, we tried to watch like the first episode of the remake, and we're like, no, I can't.
Was it the execute? Oh no, the Mayans.
Yes.
The Mayans one. Yeah, I haven't gotten into that. You know, if you guys like, I like the Charlie Hunnam. I like him a lot.
Oh, but love. I feel like
doing stuff. The Gentleman movie he's in. Yeah. He plays a big part in it. He's really good. Okay. He's super, super good at it. Yep.
Okay, continue your list. Sorry.
That's TV. Okay. Books. I'll just finish up with books since I've talked too much. I will say this is not super timely, but it's an idea to keep in mind for next year, if we see next year. And it's Every Broken Thing by Erin Moon. We talked about Erin earlier. She works with us in the podcast. It's her land guide. And you know, Erin obviously we call her CRO because she handles all of our behind the scenes stuff. She also on the Bible Binge, where Jamie and I talk about the Bible, Erin is our Bible scholar. So the premise of the Bible Binge is we're going to talk about stuff, and at the end, Erin comes in and hold us accountable if we screwed stuff up, which we wanted like a safety net.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to be, you know, we don't want to be sacrilegious. That's like a goal in life, to not be sacrilegious. So Aaron calls us on that if we are, corrects us and explains the proper idea. So she is a bit of a Bible scholar / spiritual advisor. And I don't know, was this your experience growing up Southern Baptist? Like Lent, Advent, I just wasn't a thing. I just didn't understand what they were.
Yeah, for sure. And it was like, even this year, because I have Aaron's Lent guide, my husband's like, we're not Catholic. Why?
Right.
And I was like, no, but this is good.
It's
okay.
A good thing.
I trust Aaron.
Yeah. And that's like the only reason I have even, it's not out of stubbornness. It's just like, I just have no basis of understanding of what this season is. The only reason I've started to understand it and gotten into it is because Aaron does this Lent guide where she like walks you through it very gently, very easily with audio, with written stuff. Like she comes at it with all, it's such a robust like guide. It's not, here's a PDF of 4 paragraphs and that's it. It's like, it's all over the place. So it's really, really good. Along that line, Miracles and Other Reasonable Things by Sarah Bessie. That's, I saved that to after I finished All Things Reconsidered because it's a very spiritual, it's a very aspirationally faithful book, you know, that I didn't want to intimidate me because there's an incredible writer, but it is absolutely incredible. And like, it'll really like challenge your heart and your head in a really good way.
I feel like Sarah is so smart that I almost like, I'm so intimidated by her.
And she's the most amazing person.
Yeah.
Like the most nice and amazing person. And like, I'm not being hyperbolic. It came out while I was writing and I thought, I can't read this. Because I want to quit because she's so much better at what she's doing than what I am at what I'm trying to do. So I can't even give myself over to that. That's how amazing she is. And it definitely paid off. I also, not spiritual related, The Warehouse by Rob Hart. I just finished that. It's like, it's kind of like a murder mystery kind of conspiracy theory mystery, but set in like an Amazon kind of company that like rules the world basically. And then Nothing to See Here, by Kevin Wilson. That's been one of my like, low-key favorite books of the last few months because it's about a woman goes to care for some kids who spontaneously combust on the regular. And it sounds crazy, but it's a really sweet story about like, you know, identity and your purpose in life and like how to put people before yourself. So really good stuff.
I'll have to look that one up. I just read, and it was so good. It was just like a sweet YA type book, but it was, I can't remember what it's called, American Royals. And it is what would have happened if President Washington would have taken kingdom instead. And so it's kind of like America set up as a kingdom. And it's like his daughter is the first queen of America. It's really, really fascinating. But it's like very like, who does she love? And
oh, I love it. That's a great premise.
Yeah.
You really know, I just got back with my son. His fifth grade class takes a trip to Washington. All fifth grade classes take a trip to Washington, D.C. For his school. And he just took his, and I went with him. And one of the days we went to Mount Vernon, and we saw like the whole deal. And like, we went through his house and all that stuff, like on a tour. We weren't just like looting it or anything. Like on his back porch, I think it's just like a back porch with a ton of rocking chairs, and you can see the Potomac. And it's like the most incredible view. When I've read about Washington, he's always like, President, General, great, America, this is great. I just want to go to Mount Vernon. And when you spend time there, you're like, yeah, I get it. It's beautiful and incredible and very serene out here. I understand why you want to come back here.
That's so cool. The most that I like focus on George Washington right now is in Hamilton. And he needs a right-hand man.
Can we talk for Hamilton about Hamilton for like the next hour? Because please. I could go for days about, like, I think I told someone this. If Chris Jackson, the guy who played George Washington's original Broadway show, if he ran for president as George Washington,
oh, yeah.
I'd vote right now. That's not political. I would just do that because I love that man. I love his voice.
Did you know he's Moana's dad?
I did know that. I did, only because we play in the car,
yes.
And it always say like, you know, Chris Jackson. I'll be like, the same guy. And obviously we looked into it. And his voice is so rich and pure and perfect. And I love him. And I love Lin-Manuel for that, you know.
Absolutely. And I love I went in to see Hamilton last year for Mother's Day, and it was me and my mother-in-law, and I was like, I'm going to go in blind. I'm not listening to anything. And I have avoided all Hamilton content pre this point in my life because I was like, I don't want it to be spoiled. I don't know what it's about. I just want to go in pure. My life now revolves around Hamilton.
Oh my gosh. Like, see, and mine was a little bit the same. We were doing a live show in Chicago, I guess in 2018. And Jamie and Aaron was like big into Hamilton. And she brought it to our focus. And the Friday or something before a live, or maybe the Thursday before a live show, she's like, I'm going to see Hamilton. Jamie was like, oh, I'm going to go too. And I was going to meet up with a friend. I was like, I don't get what this whole Hamilton thing's about. I don't really care about that. And the Frank Hanson, I was like, well, I'll go see Hamilton, I guess. And I went, and it just unintentionally, I was like, I don't know what this is. And I was like, this is incredible. So that was like October. Ashley and I went back in December to see it again because I had not been exposed. And then I was obsessed. And then I was like, now I want to see this, having like a baseline of understanding about the show. And it was even better the second time. It was incredible. Truly incredible.
I keep trying to find ways to take Jesse with, like, I'm like, where can we go find it? We need to go get Hamilton. And then our kids, for their 13th birthday, we take them on a trip. They get to go pick where they go. And our 12-year-old, he'll be 12, so he's got a year till his birthday trip. He's like, can we go to New York and see Hamilton? I'm like, yes, I guess, if we want.
That's incredible taste. That's exquisite taste. I feel like my son would be like, can we go to Dave and Buster's and like pick up like Wendy's? And I'm like, yes, but like I want more for you. You know, let's raise the bar. Let's
raise it up. Yeah, no, but with that taste comes a very expensive price tag.
It's very expensive. It's very expensive. That's
but
true.
But it was so good. It really is. Like, I feel like that is pop culture at its finest. And Lin-Manuel Miranda is a genius. And again, he's a man who says, take your hobby and make it a job.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That is a professional podcast host right there, bringing that thing full circle. Well done by you.
Thanks.
But you're right. That is the power of what pop culture can do. With history, that can be done with faith, that can be done with anything, of just cleverly looking at stuff and not abiding by, this is how we've always done it. This is the only way we can tell the story. We can actually tell this in a really interesting way.
The only problem I have now is I have to like break down like what's facts and what's not facts with Hamilton.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I went on a deep dive barrage of like, I'm going to read all the biographies. I'm going to read all the outsider accounts. I'm going to read this fictional retelling from the point of view of Burr, and it was like, hey, you gotta like take a break because you have other stuff you should be paying attention to.
you should be looking into like what's happening now and not in the past. Your job depends on it.
That's why the coronavirus happened, because of people like me being obsessed with Hamilton, probably.
Okay, Nox, thank you so much. This has been so fun. Where can we listen to the podcast? Where can you just need to sign up now to be a friend of the show or a best friend of the show like me? Where can we find everything that you guys do?
That's perfect. Okay, so the podcast, you can search us on Instagram, or you can just go to noxjamie.com. That's got the podcast is there, Bible Binge is there. And then me, you can find me on socials at Nox McCoy. I read a newsletter called Sectional Healing that you can sign up for. Actually, I didn't even mention this, and I should have. I've got a different kind of an individual podcast called All Things Recapped, where I recap. I'm recapping Survivor right now, but I'm also doing like movies and TV shows, stuff like that. And then if you want to buy the book, if All Things Reconsidered sounds like something you might be interested in, you go to noxmccoy.com/book.
This has been so much fun. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. This was awesome.
I'm just so excited that Nox took time out of his schedule to hang out with me and talk about his new book, All Things Reconsidered. I'm so thankful for all the work that he has done and how he has continued to help me see God within pop culture. I hope that if you enjoyed listening to Nox, that you will run today to Amazon or to your local bookstore and grab his books, The Wandering Years and All Things Reconsidered. And while you're there, you can grab a copy of It's Time for Jesus, my new book, to hear all about how God wrecked my heart while watching the fireworks show at Disney World. We'll see you next week, friends. Thanks so much for joining me for coffee today. I hope that we're already friends on social media, but if we aren't, come find me on Instagram at Jeanette Tapley or on Facebook at The Jeanette Tapley. If you have any questions about the show or what's coming up, be sure to check out itstimeforcoffeepod.com. I hope you have a great week, and I can't wait to see you back here next week when it'll be time for coffee. Bye, friend.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.